From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. For about 15 years, Wisconsin Technical College instructors have been working with inmates at the La Crosse County Jail and helping them get their GEDs, explore new careers, and learn about personal finance. The goal is not only to reduce recidivism, but to help ex-offenders find work and start a new life once they're out of jail. Recently, Western received a federal grant to take education and career placement a step further. Here today to talk about the programs are Tanya Van Tall. She's the Project Proven Coordinator at Western Technical College, and Willa McKenzie. She's a La Crosse County Jail educator employed by Western. First, Willa, I'm wondering if you can talk about the history of the jail education program at the La Crosse County Jail.
Okay, we've had a program at the La Crosse County Jail as long as 15 years, I want to say. It began with a complete cooperation with the jail, the high schools, and Western Technical College. So in the beginning, there was a La Crosse Western Technical College teacher in there, and then there was a La Crosse School District person in there too. So that was kind of nice, you know, because there was two different kind of groups we were working with. And then when I came on board, we decided that there was a contract with Western with the school districts, and so we could take care of helping facilitate that program with just Western Technical College and the contract that we have with the school districts. Because we're getting so many people from all over the state, you know, not just La Crosse, but all over. So the tie-in with the school district kind of became, you know, we can help them, you know, without having them to burden their employees with having a person hired for that. So that's kind of how that came around to having just me in there. And then as I came on board, there was a grant that we were able to get through the state. And so we were able to get that grant in where I could go full time. So I'm in there about 21 hours a week with inmates, and that doesn't really include my outside time. So we really have a good, solid time allowed program in there right now.
So with the career class, are we looking at maybe different options or exploring career opportunities for them once they're out of jail? Or is it more like maybe beefing up your resume or interview tips?
It starts out with soft skills, how to be a worker, how to get along with your coworkers, how to try and take away the negativity of your background and bring forward your skills and your strengths in order to make yourself a viable worker for that business. Our whole goal is to have inmates be prepared to sell themselves and show how they can be a contributing member of a company. And so we go through a nice series of very in-depth discussion about what it is to be a worker. You know, who do you want to work with? You know, how do you behave when you're at the workplace? Those are the key things that, you know, if, what do we say, 50% of the people don't get along at work because they just don't get along with coworkers or their bosses. So we really hit that one hard, you know, and that's, you know, a lot of our individuals have some problems with that. So what we're trying to do is show them a different way of approaching jobs. And we have some really solid workers that, you know, have had a run of bad luck, and they're in our classes, and they really don't, you know, have those get-along type work issues. It's more themselves they have to deal with, and they're able to present themselves well as a worker. So those are some of the beginning skills. And then we do finish off with resumes. We try not to do the discussion with the resume so much because it's such an individualized thing. And then after that 4 or 6 weeks, however long we run the class, we have them come back into the classroom, and that those times, I give them about 2 days, and they can work up a resume and a cover letter and, you know, kind of just a generic helpful one to get them out into the workforce when they're getting out. We have a great volunteer Jim, we call him, and he comes in, and he has a lot of experience with employment. And so I let him really run the discussions because I think it's good. A lot of them, we don't have the high majority of women, so we don't run a women's group very often, and sometimes I take care of it individually. But the men's group, we run very regularly, two groups on Thursday afternoons, and Jim does a great job with getting those students into that discussion and really ask them the pinpoint questions that they have to, know about themselves. So that works out really well.
And I think you refer to it as the general education class, where you have a mixture of educational levels within there. Can you talk about maybe the challenges associated with that?
The grade levels of reading levels can run anywhere from second grade to 12.9 plus and on beyond. So everybody's on an individualized education program in there. When they come in, they fill that form out, and we kind of work one-on-one, even though I'll have 6 to 8 people in the classroom at the same time, and everybody's working on a different subject at a different grade level with a different objective. So it's very difficult for that to happen. I think one of the things we try to do is model what's good behavior in the classroom. When we model that really helps the students to know, okay, this is what my expectations are. These are my goals I have set for myself. I need to get to work because I only have 1 hour and 10 minutes when I'm in here. So they use the resources that we have. But I could be running over to somebody teaching them, long division on the whiteboard, and then I'll run over to somebody else that has a problem on the computer, and they're having problems with, powers, roots, and, different, way different expectation there. Or social studies, history timelines, It's like, okay, now switch my brain over there.
You mentioned there are about 6 to 8 students in each class, but how many inmates at any given time are taking advantage of the jail education program?
Well, usually in a day, I'll see anywhere from 24 to 32 students a day.
Is that a good percentage of the inmates?
No, there's about 221 students in there. But if you ask me how many people that are in jail have taken advantage of the program at some point when they were in, I would say we've got 70%. Wow. I know quite a few people that have gone through, got their GED in the years that I've been there, And then they know that, they understand what the classroom's about. So once they get a HSED or a GED and that's as far as they really want to go and they know it, that's when they aren't coming back to the school because they know that the time is really needed for those GED students and the people that are really working toward something educationally at that point. So, I've seen a lot of guys in the blocks that, I know. But it's like, thank you for not coming back. But if they want things, like I've got some material that somebody's interested in, like auto mechanics or some small engine stuff, I'll send it back to the block with them. I don't need to really have them in the classroom with me, and they know that, and they understand what the routine is.
Is it a voluntary program? And is there a major interest at first, or is it one of those things, maybe there's hesitation, and then as the classes go along, the interest grows, or?
It's jail first. So most times the scenario is somebody comes into jail, they have to really take care of their case first. Mike Kiefer, the jail coordinator, will have a discussion with them when they come in, and they've maybe said on their intake sheet that they need a GED. We'll take care of those people as quickly as we can, but knowing that they have other issues, that they have to be ready to be in the classroom, because I'm just reading, writing, arithmetic, And so that's the key. And when they're ready to be in the classroom, then that's when we put them in.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are Willa McKenzie. She's a La Crosse County jail educator employed by Western Technical College, and Tanya Van Tall. She's the Project Proven Coordinator at Western, a new federal grant. Tanya, I want to bring you into the discussion.
Sure.
This Project Proven grant, it's a new federal grant that it seems to be just taking this jail education program almost a step further. Can you explain what Project Proven is?
My role is actually kind of a facilitation, looking at a big picture process with a little bit of working with directly with people coming out of the jail. The grant itself was given to La Crosse Community because of all of the initiatives that have come before this grant. So this was from the Department of Education, and specifically looking at education outcomes and work. And so what they are looking at is this education model that transition out of jail education model that was developed. And so they're evaluating our processes based on the model. And so what we are really trying to do is look at what happens from the time they reach or they're in Willa's class and they leave, then how are we, where are they going? What is happening with them? And how can we make that process a lot smoother and easier for them? Because there are good connections and things that are very well established both in the community and at the college. I think it's just sort of analyzing and looking at what's missing. How can we make the connections a little stronger from jail to the college?
Was that network system not in place before Project Proven kind of came into play?
I wouldn't say it was not in place. I think that it was the linkages were just, and Willa's got a full-time job as a teacher, and the counselors don't necessarily always go into jail and come into contact. So it's more of looking at how can we get that transition to run smoother, and so that people coming out of jail are a lot less intimidating. Western isn't a huge campus compared to a university system, but looking around the campus, it can, and if you're not coming from an education background or some place where that's been a value for you, it can be really intimidating. And so trying to get people connected with a face in the jail so that the two block walk isn't such a huge mental barrier, because mm-hmm. it really is a mental barrier and it's intimidating. And so trying to make sure that they know that there are people who are standing behind them, even if they choose not to do it now, the door is still open. So the Project Proven itself is kind of a huge undertaking, but there's so much work that's already been done that's making my job quite a bit easier, actually.
So can you maybe give an example? He's enrolled, he's been taking Willa's classes, and now he's signed up through this Project Proven. Can you maybe walk us through a day in his life, maybe transitioning from jail to the outside world with this project mm-hmm. in place?
So it's still very early in the process. So we're basically
still developing.
We're developing everything, but there are people who are identified who are either already in Willa's class or maybe are not coming to Willa's class who have said, I want an education. A lot of people have GEDs, but they just haven't made that next step to get college credit, or it's been 10 years since they've gotten their GED. And they don't have the skills to come in and take what's called the compass test, to the admissions requirement to get into the classes that you need. So Willa does offer some compass, and they're called brush up, and that's also offered on campus. So basically making sure that people are aware of the services, looking at the big picture for them, what kind of barriers are standing in your way. And I can tell you that childcare, housing, and employment are the top three, not in that order, because housing mm-hmm. is a huge, huge barrier for people. And college, as one of the smart counselors over at the technical school will say, is that college isn't about being smart, it's about being ready and having basically grit is what they're using now as mm-hmm. the term to be able to succeed. And so if you have all these barriers standing in your way, the first thing to go is going to be education. Mm-hmm. So how can we kind of have a more holistic approach as to how we're going to help people to accomplish their goals?
And you're working with different organizations that are creating this help network?
Absolutely. And a lot of this work has already been done. So basically, it's just making sure that we have a good connection and that people are all on the same page and kind of moving together forward to help individuals and increase in communication. We're working with Justice Sanctions, obviously the jail, YWCA, and ATIC. And Workforce Connections is going to be a huge partner for us, too, with some of the work, the employability skills classes that they already offer. And we're just kind of making awareness and then just kind of pushing people a little bit harder so to get them to go.
I do a survey in the classroom or a goal setting wheel of what are we going to do. And one of the places that people in jail are low on is resources, community resources. They don't know what they are. or they haven't taken time to find out what they are. If there's a few main ones, but resources is really low on their totem pole of what their, you know, tools are in their belt. So I think this grant is going to make resources in the community really step up to the plate for them. They need to know more about that. So that's where Tanya and transitioning is so important.
Mm-hmm. Or there's built-in assumptions. I have a record. I am not qualified for anything, or I have a felony. I can't get financial aid. And so part of my job and everyone's job is to sort of educate. Yes, you still can receive financial aid with a felony in certain circumstances, as long as you didn't get a felony while you were receiving financial aid. And so that's a whole population of people that still are eligible. But there was, in one meeting, an assumption that almost everyone sitting in that room said they didn't qualify for financial aid, and they did. Or a lot of students who had attended previously may be in default. And there are steps that getting out of default isn't necessarily easy, but it's not as hard as some people may think. And so we're also partnering with the Consumer Credit Council, and they're coming on board as well to help do some of that education piece.
And with the career advancement, how are you working with different community members when it comes to that?
Well, jobs is huge, and that is a big push nationwide. Are people getting employed ultimately? And to be perfectly honest, people are not going to be successful in college unless they have income and are able to meet their basic needs. So that's a big part of that. So one of the things that we're developing is this proven certificate, and working, there's kind of a two-step process with this, is we're developing and building on already the employment classes that are offered in the jail, and then getting them off campus as well, so that there's the ability to receive that information kind of smoothly. So if you've already taken X, Y, and Z class and you have your resume and you just need to have your soft skills, you can get that outside, and here's where you're going to go to do that. And then off, kind of bumping up what's offered in the jail, so that way most people will be very, it's possible that most people will be able to say, I have 90% or 95% of their certificate completed while they're sitting in jail, if they're in long enough. So that's one of the long-term goals. And then part of what we're also doing is working with employers, and there are actually a lot of employers in this community who will hire people with records, including felonies. So just giving people hope and letting them know that, yep, you might be a sex offender and you might have this on your record, but there are still people who will employ you, because there is that mindset too that I just can't get a job, so why even look? So partly identifying who will employ what type of worker, and then getting those workers ready so that we can say, we have these people and we think that they're going to be a good fit for your company.
So, Willa, with this program in place, do you think it'll make much of a difference within your classroom, or is it more something that will sort of strengthen the process once the students leave jail?
Well, I think that what we've had in the past is we get them educated, and we, you know, I can light the fire under them, and I get a personal working relationship with them, but then I can't help them once they get out. And so one of the things that the classroom does is establish a relationship where Tanya can come in and they begin to feel comfortable with both, you know, with me and with Tanya. And then they can understand that there are people out there that are willing to work with them regardless of what their background is. That piece has not been in place. And we haven't had the piece where nobody else knows who's going really through the jail and getting educated. You know, POs don't know unless they tell them. So there's a lot of non-communication of what's going on in the classroom. So that door, I think, with this proven grant is open up to say, hey, this person has not only taken advantage of all the programming that's in jail right now, but they're willing and interested in getting away from their previous activities and moving on to something that's legal, that's good, and it's going to help them be a better citizen in our community. And that's what I think is the big deal, you know, behind it.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. My guests today are Willa McKenzie, she's a La Crosse County Jail Educator employed by Western Technical College, and Tanya Van Tall, she's a Project Proven Coordinator at Western. We're talking about jail education. The idea behind all of this seems to be that ultimately you want to reduce recidivism, and once the inmate is out of jail, they can move on and start a new life or improve their life. How is it exactly that education itself is a major player when it comes to reducing recidivism.
I think that's cognitive change. You know, they feel good about themselves. They've progressed to a place where they maybe felt that they were lacking previously. And once they get that education on board, it gives them a sense of self-worth because they've completed things. And then they go on and have help. You know, it's not like, you know, I don't have any help. I've gone as far as I can. That's the end of my line, you know. That's the key to this Proven Grant is it picks up so many community resources. We want them to get back out there. And so to get that piece of education and say, hey, these are now the skills that you are showing us that you have. You have a nice math ability, or you can really read, or you can really pick things apart, or you know, you understand the logic behind putting something together. And so those things can now transfer over to the technical college. That's our big key. And there's some short-term programs because they do have to work. So there's some programming in place at the technical college where you're showing your aptitudes here in jail. Why don't you go across the street and we'll get you going on some technical training to help you get a better place in the job market. Welding is a big deal. You know, if they understand about, you know, geometry and beading and those kinds of things, and their math does well, and they can read a blueprint, or, you know, those kinds of things transfer over to the technical college, and they can really, you know, take off with the right nurturing. And that's what I tell them, you know, this the small numbers at the technical college when you're in the classes, you know, that's why we do that. So that this kind of a person who's going to probably be a hands-on person is going to excel. And that's, you know, they already have some knowledge on board and they've proven it once they were in jail with us. And that's where we want to move them to the next step.
Tanya, oh, go ahead.
And I was going to say, too, that recidivism, education in a bubble is not going to reduce recidivism. It's not. And neither is just getting a job. I mean, Willa touched on the fact that you have to have all the services in place. Basic needs need to be met. But along with that, meaningful work and something to lose are the two things that I think are really going to keep the people from, because if they think that they have something to lose, they're going to think twice, possibly. Or if their job, if it's just some job that they don't really want and it's not, if it's a minimum wage job and it's not really helping their financial bottom line, those two things are not going to help. So really building from their GED, getting them the first, some people we're working with, not very many, but some, they have no employment background whatsoever. So figuring out how to help them and keep moving them forward to, and then giving them the support to say, this may be a stepping stone. It may not, all of us have had jobs we don't like, but this is A, we're going to get you to F, or we're going to get you to B, even for some people. But just having extra people and knowing that there is support in the community and people who are backing them, I think will help tremendously. And hope. Hope is huge.
Is there a timeline that people who are using this program can stick with the program, or is it just you are always there as a resource if you're needed?
It's very voluntary and self-selecting. And because of the nature of this grant and the fact that grants run on 2 to 3 year cycles, we'll be here as much as we can. If people fall off our radar, we're not going to ever close the door on people, but at the same time, the people who are going to choose to move forward they're going to be mostly doing it on their own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You definitely know somebody's going to move forward. They're going to go with it.
And we're not going to say you have 1 year to complete this. That's just not the nature of this population. So we'll, and I've said it before, it's new. So we're kind of, the first group is kind of sort of a test. A pilot, even of how that's going to function and look, and then from there it's kind of a two cohort type of situation.
Is this only La Crosse County former inmates, or are other counties going to be involved in the Project Proven Grant?
Pretty much, it's who comes through our doors here in La Crosse, because it's our neighbors, it's our community that's going out, you know, and we're trying to make it so that they can be a contributing member of our community. And that's really the people we're looking for, too, is, you know, we want them to be successful right here at their home.
Tanya Van Tall is the Project Proven Coordinator at Western Technical College. Willa McKenzie is a La Crosse County jail educator employed by Western. We were talking about jail education in La Crosse County. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. I also had the chance to talk with one of the first participants in Project Proven. 18-year-old Clifton Trawick recently served a 6-month sentence in the La Crosse County Jail after being convicted for his role in stealing a van and leading police on a high-speed chase through the city. Before his arrest, he was getting good grades at Central High School and did graduate, but he says he was hanging out with the wrong crowd. He started taking classes offered by Willa McKenzie while he was in jail.
I started taking them like right away. When I went to jail, it was during finals and stuff, so I had to finish my finals from there.
Your high school finals?
My high school finals. So I went to jail right before finals, so I had to finish those finals. And then after that, I got right with Willa right away. She kind of approached me, and I was like, I might as well take some classes and stuff, you know. Don't know how long I'm going to be in here, but anything could help.
Why was it that you wanted to take classes right away?
Because education is success. That's the only way you're going to be successful in life is if you better your education nowadays. I mean, without a high school diploma or a GED or HSED or something like that out there, it's hard for people. So I figured I might as well graduate high school and then hopefully get in a career I like. I'm hopefully going to start class here at TC January 6th for either business management or dental hygienist. I'd rather be a dentist, but business is fun too, I guess.
What sort of classes did you take with Willa?
I took a lot of brush-up classes. I even took a GED test, too. But she really just has a lot of brush-ups. Like, she can help you if you maybe aren't that good at algebra or something. She can help you, you know, learn some stuff and then get you into TC over here to get your GED or whatever it is that you need. And then you can, you know, start school from there. I mean, take some college courses or whatever it is that you think you want to do.
What sort of difference do you think it made for you having those classes there?
I would have lost a lot of schoolwork. I mean, I would have been gone for 6 months, and then I would have had to go back to high school and finish it all up. But in there, I got to get my stuff done while I was in there instead of wasting that whole little 6 months of life. So, I mean, it would probably be a little bit rough around me if I hadn't have took those classes or whatnot. I'd still be probably in school, in the high school at least.
And I can imagine that transitioning from jail to school would be difficult. And maybe it is difficult, maybe it's not. How has it been for you?
Well, it wasn't too hard for me, but for other people it could be. I don't know. Some people have to start all over from scratch, you know, nothing, get out of jail and start over again. But I'm young. I see myself as outgoing and stuff, so it shouldn't be too hard for me.
Can you talk about Project Proven and how you've worked with that program so far?
It definitely helped me while I was in jail to finish up the little last credits I had to get to my high school diploma. But since I've got out, they're pretty much just trying to help people transition from out of jail into the community. You know, they have a lot of resources for, like, jobs and stuff. And it's good for just anybody that needs a little push in the right direction out of jail and transition into the school place. I don't know too much about it yet. You know,
You're one of the first to work with the program.
Well, yeah, I don't know too much about it yet, but it seems like everything's good. They're helping me move along. You know, there's couple of job things here and there, you know, just giving me a bunch of resources in the community to jump back into things, I guess.
And you talked about, I mean, the fact that you're young, and I mean, you obviously did well in high school too. But do you think it's important for when people are getting out of jail to maybe pursue something like education right away, or, you know, maybe improving on a job skill?
Of course, it's always good to improve on your education anytime. Like right now is the best time, really. But I mean, if there's other things you have to get done first, like maybe a job, a house, a car, you know, take care of your family like that, I definitely push someone to do that before going to school. But school, in the long run, you're always going to do better with the better education you have on your wall. So, I mean, for anybody out there, if you haven't gone to school, even if you have to go back and just get a GED or whatever, something's better than nothing.
You said you're hoping to start classes in January. Yeah. What will you be doing up until then?
Well, I'm going to be working. I'm going to take a couple brush-up classes here and there, but I'm just going to work and try to get back on my feet. I mean, like I said, my mom kicked me out young, so I'm got to get on my own now. You know, I have to get my own house or whatnot. I'm living with my brother right now, but yeah, I'm going to get back to work, get my own house, and start again on January 6th.
Clifton Trawick of La Crosse is one of the first participants in Project Proven at Western Technical College. The federal grant program aims to put La Crosse County ex-offenders on a path to get a career. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we'll talk about a mentorship program at the La Crosse County Jail called Circles of Support. Archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, extended interviews, and photos can be found on our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. The Circles of Support program at the La Crosse County Jail attempts to ease jail inmates' transition back into the community. The mentorship program tries to make an inmate's life more secure, so they are less likely to repeat a crime and go back to jail. It also attempts to build relationships between stable community members and the inmates, so they have someone to rely on when they get out of jail. Circles of Support is sponsored by AMOS, a group of La Crosse area churches that work on issues together. Mark Mitchell is a Circles of Support volunteer, and Tom Skemp is a longtime minister at the La Crosse County Jail. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis asked Tom Skemp why the program started several years ago.
Watching these guys and gals come in and out a lot and trying to look and see why that's happening, and one of the main issues is that when they get out of jail, if nothing else happens, they go back to the same place they were at before they came into jail. And that generally, for many of them, involves drugs and alcohol, abusive relationships. The number of men and women who I have literally asked this question of, do you know anybody other than just a passing acquaintance who doesn't drink, drug, smoke, beg, rob, and steal the same way you do? And they have to think about it for a while, but the answer generally comes back no. Everybody they know behaves that way. So the idea is to try and introduce regular people or normal people into their lives. It's, in a sense, a contrived relationship, but the hope is that in that forced relationship at the beginning, something will blossom and they will have people and resources that are not in and out of jail all the time, that do not have drug and alcohol issues, that have never been arrested. I mean, to the point where we have to train the volunteer mentors that are coming into the circles a lot about the criminal justice system because they have no experience with it. Madison runs a program also called Circles of Support. They are the model that we used for setting up our program. They were very helpful in getting us going, and we've been running with it since then.
How does the program work?
We get together with them once a week. We can do anything we want, whatever works for the core member and the team. What our group generally does is just go have some coffee and talk about life and build a relationship. It takes a good month or so before you're even comfortable with each other because it is somewhat contrived at first. But once you get comfortable with each other, things start to happen. You start to gel and they'll start to talk to you and ask you some questions and start to trust each other. And then it's just like a regular friendship. You're there for each other.
It does become a friendship.
Well, it doesn't take long to see if they're playing a game. And of course, it's human nature. There's going to be some who do play a game with you. But if you stick with it and you're genuine with each other, it tends to work out pretty good. But like you said, there's going to be some people, and it may take 2-3 efforts before they start to see that, they need to change their ways. But once again, if you give it a chance and you work together and you become friends, and it works out pretty good.
Tom, how do you pick the inmates who will be part of the program? And they're called core members, correct?
That's right. I talk to them a lot. I mean, most of them are aware that this program exists, although slots only come available every once in a while. Looking for people where we have a reasonable chance of success, but who have a need for something like this. I mean, there's a few people, the low-risk people that we have in jail that are probably going to self-correct. There's not very many of those, but, they're good on their own. They don't need any help. And then there's the people kind of at the other end of the spectrum who have serious mental health issues. They're not really coping well. And they may have a long-term chance of success, but not within this structure. So we're looking for people that are kind of in the middle, that want to change their behavior, at least say that they do. Most of them going into it don't have any idea how hard that is to do. But they want to change their behavior. I explain as best I can how difficult it's going to be and what they're facing. And if they're still willing after that, then we have them fill out an application. And in an ideal situation, they're still in jail. We get some of the court people to come in and interview them to make sure that there's not going to be any problems, you know, unforeseen. It also makes it much easier for the Corps member when they walk out of jail. You know, it's scary to walk into a place where you don't know anybody. They've at least had a chance to meet the people on their circle, at least some of them. So it's a little bit easier.
Who are the volunteers that agree to become part of this program? I'll throw that out to Mark, I guess.
It's basically members of churches, mostly. But it's open to anyone. Anyone can be involved. And we meet with the Amos groups, and that's how people hear about it. But it's through the churches for the most part.
And what is the interaction like? Are you just talking to the person?
Well, you, like I said, it's just like a friendship. You talk about life. You can go bowling. You can go hiking. You can do whatever works for your group. It may not work. Some people are not able to do all those things. But and you're there for when they need a little advice. And you're not there to give advice, but if they ask.
The whole idea is to change behavior, is it not?
Yes. Yes.
So what are some of the typical situations that you're finding?
The commitment that we ask the groups to make is for only 6 months, you know, which is not a really long time, but it's time enough to try and establish a basic relationship. And hopefully some of those, a relationship with, if not the whole group, at least some of the people in that group will continue on after the 6 months. But it does take time. We've had most people have come back to jail. I can't say that we're, you know, batting 1,000 or anything like that. It's hard work to change your behavior. But when they come back to jail, they seek me out, and they're asking me to be in touch with their circle while they're in for however long it is. Okay, we had one guy that came back in, kept touch with the circle, and he ended up going to prison for a year or so. He came back, kept contact with the circle, you know, once he came back. He's back in jail now. Circle's been keeping touch with him. You know, so it is not something that is solved in a six-month window. It takes long-term work on both people's parts. And when the friendships blossom, it's easier to spend time. It's easier to spend time with people you're friends with. And when those friendships blossom, then the connections stay made. And ultimately, it's all about relationships. You know, I mean, everything is about relationships. And we're trying to help them establish good, solid, firm relationships.
Have you measured the success of the program?
We don't have those statistics available to us. There's been a change in the management, and we don't have all the paperwork, so.
Some of the statistics I found when I was researching this suggest that of those in the La Crosse County Jail, maybe 80% are habitual repeat offenders.
Anecdotally, I would have to agree with that, but we don't keep statistics on recidivism for the county jail, so I can't say that for sure. What they do have farm statistics for is the state system. And last year they measured it, and it was our recidivism in the state prison system was 46%, which is above the national average, which I think is 40%, and it's significantly down from what it was 10 or 15 years ago. So, yes, there's more locally, I think we have more people that keep coming back than otherwise.
But you can't say anecdotally if maybe, you know, half the circle of support core members repeat or not.
Anecdotally, I would have to say, and Mark, you can check me on this, but I would say that probably about 70 to 80% of them have been back in jail since they became a core person. But the relationships have continued on, so we haven't given up hope on them.
Just because people are repeat offenders and are going through the program, can we say it's not working then, or does it just take time for that light bulb to go on? And
myself, speaking for myself, I don't know that they're all necessarily repeat offenders. A lot of them will relapse, and that will put them back in jail, which I guess would make them a repeat offender. But it's not so much that they're out committing crimes as it is they're relapsing, and because of the probation they're violating, and they're being put back in. So that's a long-term there's no short-term solutions for that.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of inmates have chemical dependency problems, mental health issues. Are those people being targeted as core members in the program?
It's hard to find anybody that in the jail that doesn't have one of those issues.
Yeah.
So, yes. So I guess, yes, they are being targeted. We're not avoiding them, if that's what you're getting at.
So, no, that's not what I'm getting at. But I'm just curious, are they more difficult to work with? And is the circle of support equipped to deal with those issues? Or do they have to keep up with things like the AA meetings and
You know, the circles medication? Of support are not counselors.
Yeah.
And we don't have any professionals. You know, they're just people, simple people, I don't mean simple, but, you know, regular people that we're trying to establish relationships with. We do have a training program for the people that are going to be on the circle to introduce them to addiction issues, criminal justice system. We've had judges come in, defense attorneys, public defenders, district attorneys, professionals in the AODA field. We try to cover all the bases just so they have a clue of what's been going on in most of these people's lives that are going to be the core members.
Mark, why do volunteers get involved in the program?
I can only speak for myself, and I see a need, and I myself witnessed a gentleman living in a house across the street from me. It was an abandoned house, and that's kind of what prompted me. He got arrested, and all he had was violations for parole and probation. He hadn't really done anything. He had nowhere to live. He just got let out of jail, and he was living on a porch out in the middle of the dead of winter, and it was the conditions were awful, and it struck me. It moved me, and I decided it was time to do something rather than, and I was the one that called the police and had him arrested, and so I felt pretty bad about it, and rather than being part of the problem, I decided it's time to get involved and do what I can.
Did he become part of the circle of support, and did you become part of his group?
I didn't get to know him whatsoever. He kind of disappeared after that. You know, you're only have access to so much. You know, I didn't really get to talk to him or anything. I just checked up and saw what happened with him, and you know, he went to jail, and from there I never saw from him, heard from him again.
What do you get out of volunteering?
It kind of opens your eyes. It opens your heart. It gives you a little hope for humanity, I guess, not to sound cliche, but you become involved and you see things you that you wouldn't see. You walk down, when I go to visit with someone who's in jail and we meet in Tom's office, and you walk through that jail and you realize what's really going on in this world that we don't see. We walk around on the street and we don't see that jail. It's just an ivory tower, basically. It's all closed off. We don't know what it looks like inside there. And until you really go in there, you don't realize what a lot of these people are going through.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We are talking about a mentorship program at the La Crosse County Jail called Circles of Support, which aims to not only improve the lives of inmates coming out of the jail, but also tries to create long-lasting relationships between inmates and stable community volunteers. Our guests during this segment are La Crosse County Jail Minister Tom Scamp and Circles of Support spokesperson Mark Mitchell. Are you seeing those long-lasting relationships being formed between volunteers and inmates?
Myself, I can speak for our group. The first person that we had join our group, our first core member, had been arrested for robbery and multiple drugs and alcohol-related issues. And going into it, to be honest with you, I was pretty pessimistic, and I thought, I don't see how this is going to happen. But, you know, we started meeting, and it was, like I said, it's uncomfortable at first. And slowly but surely, we'd go to drug court with him every week. You don't have to do that. And that's another way you can see what's actually taking place in our court system. A very good program, I might add, the drug court program. But we went with him every week, and we were his support. He didn't have – his parents weren't there. His family wasn't there. I'm sure with good reason, probably had given up on him by that time. And 6 months went by just like that, and before you know it, we were hanging out. We still – meet. This has been going on 2 years now. This gentleman has joined our circle, and he has now become part of the solution. And he's been clean and sober for going on 2 years now, and he's turned his life around in a big way. And I can't take credit for that, but I'd like to think we helped in a little way.
Tom, do you see a lot of those relationships forming?
Yeah, it's more normal to have some kind of a relationship form. I mean, I think in Mark's case, the whole circle has stayed involved, but there's other examples where after the 6 month went by, the circle kind of dissolved, but one person within that circle kept contact with the other fella, the core member. That core member ended up going back to prison. The volunteer kept touch with him, and they developed a one-on-one personal relationship. He got out of prison several months ago, and I haven't seen him back, which is always a good sign.
Do you have to meet within the circle, or can somebody just pick up the phone and give you a call?
We train the volunteers to always try and have at least two people present. One of the skills that people that are in and out of jail a lot become really, really good at is manipulation. And we don't want to get anybody in a position where they can play one member off of another. So if there is interaction one-on-one, that report always goes back to the larger circle at the next meeting so that there are no secrets. As you can well imagine, a lot of the core members' lives are full of secrets. And in these relationships, we have no secrets. And that's right up front.
What is the training like for the volunteers?
When I did it, it was a full day. You know, there's been times where they've had 2-3 days worth. You're like Tom said, you're going to talk to professionals. You're going to talk to people who have worked with inmates in jail. You're going to talk to counselors. You're going to watch many PowerPoints. You're going to learn about manipulation. It's pretty intense.
The other part of the program that we're doing on jails involves the WTC Proven Program. Tom, does Circles of Support complement that educational component at the jail?
I think that it does. One of the proven statistical facts is that when people get a better education, they're less likely to reoffend. So that's just one piece. If we can add on improved relationships outside of their old circle with created new circles where they're not always hanging out with the people that they used to hang out with, that can only help. There's a lot of little things that need to happen in order for it to kind of come together.
You mentioned the Dane County Jail does this. Does this program exist anywhere else in Wisconsin or the country?
You know, I did a Google search on circles of support style programs, and there's a number of them around the country. They don't all follow the same model. They do tend to be small and localized. I think that there's a lot to be said for small localized programs. Although we've always had people from the La Crosse County Jail, we would be certainly open to having someone who's coming out of the prison system and coming back to La Crosse. I think the main reason we've mainly had people out of the La Crosse County Jail is because I'm in the La Crosse County Jail, and it's easier for me to make those connections. If we had somebody in the prison system doing what I'm doing, we'd have those connections too.
I know your resources are stretched very thin, but have you ever considered measuring the program on a more formal basis, you know, about the success rate and that type of thing?
Yes, we have.
And that just is, you haven't been able to do that?
Well, we recently had a change in, when the program started, we had some paid staff that were kind of taking care of things. And as the funding dried up for that, it's kind of devolved onto all volunteers, which makes it a little bit more difficult, first of all, to kind of recover some of the history, but also to have the time to do that. I think that we have people in place now, volunteers, that are going to be able to do it from this point moving forward. And as we can cover bits and pieces from what the past is, I think we'll be able to build a pretty accurate picture.
Mark, what does the Circle of Support Program need? Are there any needs at this point? Do you need volunteers?
We can always use volunteers. We've got currently about 4 running circles at the time, and we can always use volunteers. And as in any, money is always needed in anything like this. It's not a huge need, but the money, I mean, because it is all volunteers right now, but like Tom said, we did have a paid coordinator that was able to take care of some of these details that it's a little harder for the volunteers to do.
If there are forwarding circles, does that mean there's four inmates in the program right now? Or do the circles deal with more than one inmate?
Each circle has one active core member, but yeah. Most of the circles, I believe, are also maintaining relationships with their previous core members. So okay. Most circles have more than one person that they're in relationship with.
So if you had more volunteers, could you allow more inmates into the program?
Yes. Yes. I would think our biggest single need is more volunteers.
Tom Skemp is La Crosse County's jail minister, and Mark Mitchell is a volunteer with Circles of Support, a mentorship program that brings area volunteers who have not been in trouble with the law together with jail inmates in an attempt to change the inmates' behavior. They talked with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find extended interviews, photos, and a link to Circles of Support. And if you'd like to comment on our program or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.